Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway. It's an opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and maybe even some insight into the news media issues that we've been talking about over the past week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here in the WAMC studios with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
I'm here under protest.
Yes, he would rather not be here. And Dr. Kaylin Brown, the head of the communications department at the College of St. Rose.
I am here happily.
Good, good. Why are you under protest, Alan? I don't know.
No. Just the way I'm feeling.
Yeah. It's the new granddaughter.
Oh, yeah. He wants to be with the baby.
Yeah,
he
I'm here under protest.
Yeah.
And also because both of you are here.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. Because if you weren't here, there would be nobody to defend your point of view.
Well, that's right. And I hesitate to say this. But what would it really be like if I wasn't here? You guys would be patting yourself on the back. You'd be saying stupid things like, we do no harm when you do harm all
you
the time.
You enable us. This is WAMC.
That's it. All right, Kaylin.
It would be a love fest or worse.
We're enabled. It's or worse. We're going to talk about the way that the demonstrations and the tragedy in Charlottesville were covered. And we're going to talk about resulting coverage in our community. There's a lot to talk about here. Actually, we start with a letter from a reader in... A listener, it would be the medium we're on. A listener in Schenectady, Robert, who questions the way that words frame the conversation in the media. He wants to know about the media frames the white supremacist violence. The BBC's breaking news tweet read, "One dead amid clashes between U.S. white nationalists and counter-protesters in Charlottesville." Same word, clashes, used by AOL, he says, and he says that's a term designed to obscure blame, presenting a picture of two equal sides engaging in violent activities. Reading "one dead" after clashes at a white nationalist rally gives us no idea who died or who did the killing. You know, I'm sorry, I really don't agree with that. I think the word clashes is a factual account of what happened. There were clashes. And I think also it is very difficult to write headlines because they have to fit. They have to have an active verb. We get more complaints about headlines than anything else. But it's a very difficult process to use so few words to encapsulate a complex story.
As a reporter, I did not write my own headlines. We left that to the editors. I'm grateful that so many editors wrote so many good headlines.
Except that you got a lot. I know I was not going to talk, but I feel compelled to. Except you got a lot of letters, didn't you, saying, that was a terrible headline. And you wrote back and said, oh, no, I don't write the headlines, right?
It is difficult to write a headline and include all of the moving parts of a story. We did have a reporter who covered education in the city of Albany named Richard Wexler, who had his own business card made up that said, "I don't write the headlines." And he handed that business card out because he didn't want to be held accountable for what an editor did. And that was, I loved Richard. He was a good guy.
And what if the editors were stupid? I mean, that's the thing. There are times you read the story and then you read the headline and say, wait a second, this ain't what it said.
I worked with a lot of smart editors.
Yeah, I don't know any editors who are stupid.
There you go again, always apologizing.
And Robert, our listener in Schenectady, also objected to the New York Times headline that said, "Car plows into crowd as racial tensions boil over in Virginia." He was upset about that because he said the headline veiled responsibility by attributing agency to an inanimate object and disembodied emotions. I think he means it shouldn't have said car plows into it. It should say white supremacist
or driver
mows down. Yeah, driver.
But ascribing blame to a person. So the blame game is problematic on all fronts when we're talking about this. Stupid editors or white supremacists. The job of the media is to tell the story as they see it. So,
well, as my 3-year-old grandson would say, now you've said it, as the reporter sees it. And the seeing, of course, as you remember, Judge Jerome Frank thought that every judge ought to be psychoanalyzed to see what their implicit values were. He didn't say that about reporters, but I'm saying it about reporters because you come in with a Weltanschauung, a worldview.
And once you psychoanalyze a reporter, what do you do with that information?
You put it in the subhead. You
say, this reporter is crazy. I've started to use some words.
But you do understand what I'm talking about. You know, that everybody who writes a story goes through a particular psychological or intellectual framework, right? I mean, if you went to Hunter, which I did, you might have had a different view of life than if if you went to Williams College, where they're a little bit more, well, intellectual, or put another way, snotty.
With all due respect to the folks living under the Purple Dome. But there are two things that I would have to say to that. First, by training, journalists try to keep their personal emotions out of their reporting. And by practice, we have systems that have been devised over the years in journalism, including editors reading stories that reporters write and stuff being vetted before it gets published. Mm-hmm. Those practices are intended to try to wash out some of that personal bias that we bring to it.
When you say some of it, it's a good idea. Yeah. But, you know, you're also been moaning the blues here for a couple of years now about how newspapers are having to let certain people go, and often those are copy editors or people, as you say, in the slot. So you and now they're working, they're bleary-eyed, they're drinking coffee. They can't be blamed for everything that slips through, right?
I was lucky to work with one of the best editors, who I believe is still at the Times Union, Rob Brill. On Friday evening, shoulder to shoulder, late, and every reporter had his or her turn, we would go line by line through every story. And it did not matter how long you had been at the paper, and it did not matter what your bona fides were. Rob went through all the stories to work on the sorts of issues that Rex is talking about.
We call it brilling. It's actually a verb at the Times Union.
It truly is. Getting brilled was an excellent exercise. It helped me become a better teacher. I am so grateful to Rob to this day. But I hope that every journalist has the opportunity to work with an editor who is as committed and as vigilant as Rob Brill has been.
Okay, well, that testimonial is fine. He's a terrific guy. There's no question about it. But I have a question for you. What if, and I want you to entertain this without, you know, the snotty kind of response that I get about how we in journalism school do this or that. What if the Rob Brill himself had prejudices? I got you there.
Well, we all have prejudices.
Well, that's the point, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, you just put yours out in the air every day. So what's the point? Your point?
Rex, that is such a cheap shot.
It's true. No, I'm just reporting accurately on what you're...
It is so much like you. When you go on the defensive, you say, you're a bad person.
It is the human condition that we all have biases. Yeah. That makes us unique and beautiful and wonderful.
But that's important to know, isn't it?
Well, it's important to know.
Isn't it important?
Absolutely. And what is your solution here?
The guy who is in the slot or is the editor at the Times Union or the New York Times or the New York POST, a word I won't say out loud, are they...
Because of his bias against the New York POST and all things conservative. Go ahead.
Not all things conservative. I happen to be very conservative in some things. I'm a big family values man, for example.
So on news stories, there is a byline that's an indicator to the reader, and in this instance, to the listener. We've all said who we are and where we're coming from. This is who we are. You know, everything written under that byline is through the eyeballs and the ears of that reporter. Not the headline. That's why.
Your only alternative, Alan, is to just not do journalism because you're saying, it's a human endeavor and humans can't be trusted to tell anything fairly.
The nice thing about this show is that we explore all this stuff. I mean, it's not that I have the ability to change anything. It's just that there's an exploration. Now, if you guys were anti-press instead of just putting your arms around each other and singing Kumbaya and all the rest of that stuff, I would have to take the other side. Don't you see?
Oh, I see.
So you want us to attack our own livelihoods?
That quote should be enshrined over the door of this place.
But our listener who wrote in, Robert from Schenectady, objected to all of these headlines because he said it would be better if they would make it clear that it was the anti-fascist protesters who were mowed down, but the initial instinct to obscure who did what to whom, he said, that's what he believes is going on here. The instinct to obscure who did what to whom speaks to the media's fear of placing blame on the far right.
Okay, I hear him, and he's as guilty of having values as everybody else is. But in a headline, the word car, think about it, has three letters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough to find a word with three letters. You can't say
auto. If it's capitalized, we actually count it as 3.5 in a headline count.
Well, I'm so sorry, Rex.
Just trying to tell you how you're just counting headlines.
I didn't follow that.
So there are challenges that our listener may not have been aware of. I think the media tries to portray the facts as accurately as possible. Mm-hmm. I'm appreciative, actually, of this listener who is reading so closely. We could all benefit from more close reading of the news. Language is a question that we keep revisiting, and it's worthwhile to keep revisiting language. I'm particularly interested in his observations about motor vehicles because I believe AAA actually is trying to change the conversation around the question of accidents and insurance companies too. They are not accidents, they are crashes. That's with an R, not an L, because someone is responsible. So
in this case, it was. And this was a crash, not an accident, right?
This is not connected to Charlottesville. I'm just pointing out that in their literature, I have read about AAA's efforts to try to change the conversation around crashes versus accidents.
Very interesting. Yeah. And I like it because crashes is fewer headline. It's a better count on the headline, too, as opposed to accidents.
Talk about inside baseball. I didn't find that interesting at all.
Wake up, Alan. Sorry to put you to sleep.
So now, it's the Media Project for Northeast Public Radio. That's Kaylin Brown, Alan Chartok, and Rex Smith here. And if you want to share your thoughts, media@wamc.org is how you can do that. You know, one of the ways that we can help assure that there is thoughtful...
I'm sorry, did you say insure or assure?
Assure.
Okay, assure.
Right.
Okay, got it.
That's spelled A-S-S-U-R-E. is by having a newsroom that reflects a full range of the community. That would be diversity in the workplace. And this has been a continuing difficult situation for American newsrooms. Here's an interesting story in Columbia Journalism Review pointing out that we are far from the goals that have been in place for almost a half century. In 1978, the American Society of News Editors, which I'm a part of, pledged to achieve parity with the percentage of people of color in the general population by the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And so that deadline was blown. We hadn't achieved parity by that time. And so a new goal was set.
And not even closely.
By 2025. But yeah, we're still nowhere close to achieving parity.
How come? What's your problem?
Well, one of the stories talks about the in the CJR story actually talks about the fact that the arrival of the interwebs has skewed the entire playing field in newsrooms because of the diminishment of personnel overall in newsrooms. It has diminished the number of opportunities available for people to get a job in a newsroom. Still, coming from a classroom perspective, we need to be training more individuals to complete all of the work necessary to be eligible to work in newsrooms. A recent study I read for this show talked about the fact that the top newspapers around the country, their mastheads are not reflecting equitably what the population is made up of. Mm-hmm. Still, that has to do with, I think, a failure to support people as they're moving through the pipeline. Now, I actually dug up in my office filled with papers yesterday, a 1994 special edition of the San Francisco Examiner that was created by the Hearst Corporation.
Indeed.
Two reporters from each newsroom were sent to San Francisco. So myself and Mike Lopez from the Times Union were sent out to San Francisco for a week for a diversity training.
Hmm.
That was to try to sensitize the staffs at each of the Hearst Corporation newspapers on diversity issues. It was funded in part by the Robert Maynard Institute. And we published this newspaper in San Francisco. They sent us out on the
That's
streets
so cool.
and said, Go out and discover what diversity is.
Well, look. You're never going to be black. Let's face it. You are almost, and I don't want this to come out the wrong way, but, you know, I mean, you're blonde and you're all of that.
That would be white.
Yeah. And all of that.
But you can do diversity training. I remember when NPR pulled a fast one here on us at WAMC, they told us to send our diverse reporters or employees out to one of those conferences.
Yes.
They never came back. They said to these people, you want a better job, you want a different job. And they had promised us, they would not do that, but they did it anyway. So I don't trust NPR any more than I usually do.
Mm. Well, in this instance, this was a good training ground, and we learned a lot in San Francisco because they sent us to a wonderfully diverse city.
But you're not black.
Yes,
you're not black,
but
you're not gay.
But I could learn how to cover issues of diversity better than perhaps I had.
Yeah, better, but you're not. And so what Rex raised with us in the beginning is, I'm so sorry to give you a hard time here, but what Rex raised with us in the beginning was the idea that we're all trying to do the right thing, that we're all trying to recruit people of color and people who are diverse in terms of their maybe a gender background and the rest of it. But there's nothing like having people who really come from that.
Well, and diversity is not just a matter of race. I think Robert Maynard, who Kalen quoted, the Maynard Institute, he was a great newspaper publisher,
started as an editor,
would talk about the five fault lines of American society, which I hope I can cite. Race, gender, generation, geography, and age. And if you can have diversity across those five fault lines, that would help your news report be more reflective of the reality of your community. Race, gender, geography, that's where you're from, generation, and whatever the last
age.
Less generation.
Age.
That's
yeah.
the way they admit to law schools. There was a point that there was a point here in New York, around New York City, where you couldn't get into a medical school if you were Jewish, because they wanted people who were diverse. And they say, okay, too many people who are applying are of that orientation. So everything has its problems.
Everything does have its problems. And the point, I think, of this report is to make sure we are sensitive and we keep working and striving.
Yeah.
Striving is part of the problem. We need to keep striving.
I reject this. And I'll tell you why. Because I think, you know, we always get these reports. They get to the shelf. They get a lot of dirt on top of them and they sit there. I'm disappointed. I'm ready for a little change here.
What kind of change? I'm trying to imitate your grandson. I was just worried that he was going to fire one of us, Kalen, you know, because we're not reflective of the community.
Exactly. I was thinking of it.
He's ready for change here. You know, come on. This is why we have Donald Trump. We're ready for change. This is... sorry, that was a moan I heard.
No, but it's a terrible problem, Rex. Let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, on your newspaper, I know you try very hard, and you've argued before these microphones again and again, that in order to go into a community and get the story, diversity is very important, and that you have a very tough time in finding the right people. You've said that. And
absolutely.
It's been an honest...
So back to the classroom. Yeah. The incoming freshman class at St. Rose this semester is the most diverse freshman class we have ever had.
And how about in journalism?
My first class is a week from Monday, and I will let you know.
Okay, the reason I say...
What I see. I could do a request of everybody's backgrounds. I probably won't, but that I've been told our class is diverse, and then I'm going to have a full journalism class excites me, and hopefully we can train some of those students characterized as diverse.
Does a black student who's in journalism have an easier time of it, because so many of us are looking for people who are diverse, than I only laughed because you cracked your knuckles, Caitlin, and that came right
next
over
to the
radio.
Microphone.
That came right over the radio.
Sorry.
Okay, no, but does a black student in 2017, who is a journalism student, considering what Rex raised with all of us, you know, this search for diversity, have a better chance or a worse chance of getting hired?
That's a tough question to answer.
Because Caitlin is not the only professor in the room.
Well, from my perspective, when and happily, again, we have employers who contact the communications department at St. Rose and ask us for students to either work in internships or they're looking for someone to fill a job, we send them our best students. That's who we send them.
And I don't think that it's necessarily that it is easier to get a job at all if you're a Black journalist or an Asian journalist or an Hispanic journalist. Though I think we try to have diversity as a factor, as somebody that we interview in every opening.
I think I got you guys now. I want to make sure I'm going to ask you this question. Okay, ready? So Caitlin said, we send our best students.
Right.
So how would you describe who your best student is? You look at the grades, you look at the papers, somebody who is, you know...
It's actually who not looks like always they,
like,
grades.
Who likes... Well, okay, I know there's going to be weasel room here. But it looks like you and Rex, who could be, you know, models for the next Barbie generation.
And for an elderly Barbie generation,
yeah, the parents,
is what you mean.
Barbie's parents.
Okay. I reject that.
Okay.
I reject
okay.
all of it.
I hear you. But here's my question then. No matter how you look at it, do you say, okay, if you're in the bottom third of the class, but you happen to be Black, for example, but if you are in the bottom third of the class, but newspapers and others are looking for diversity, which is so important to them, and it is here, do you send that student as opposed to somebody who's at the top of the list?
I send a student who has performed well in the class, who shows hunger, which is what every reporter needs to have, who shows initiative, who shows creativity, who shows a willingness to go above and beyond and understands what it means to ask the right questions and to not be cowed by fear of what a source might say to them. So bravery counts, curiosity counts. Good writing is really helpful. My job is to help that come along and a number of other things.
But... Okay, but here, listen out. What if all of those things that you just mentioned as criteria still don't apply to a student who is in the bottom third, but people are crying to balance their workforce? Do you send them that student?
Students who perform poorly in class are less likely to be recommended to an employer. That would reflect poorly on the student who would be frustrated in the job, on the employer and his or her editors who would be frustrated with an ill-prepared student, and ultimately to the readers, viewers, listeners to whom we are obligated, citizens.
And just to be very clear, you're not implying that the students of color are necessarily those in the bottom of the class.
I thought I made that clear right in my beginning. Clearly, if the student happens to be of color and is the best A student in the, thank you for that, Rex, and is the best A student in the group, that person gets sent. There's no question about it.
The very best students we advocate for and don't wait for a call. We search for them.
Right. No, I get that. I was just trying to clarify because you raised a very important point that we're all very concerned about, Rex.
We are. And it's important. And I've often said, as Kaylin says, the best writing is not necessarily the best writer is not necessarily the best journalist for the job, because bravery, curiosity. I always say that the first attribute that I'm looking for in hiring is, of course, intelligence. I had a mentor who used to say, well, the reporter should be the smartest person in the room. And I always get a little chuckle from people when I say that's generally only true when you're covering the legislature. Sorry, that's unfair. But intelligence, then energy, then curiosity. And then only after that, I would put in skills, as in writing or photography or that
well,
kind of
we
thing.
Well, we are running out of time, but I wanted to say very quickly that in my classes over the years, and I'm very old now, and I've had many, many classes, some of the people who were just, they weren't very nice, have turned out to be the most successful reporters. And some of those who were nice have turned out not to be.
Mm-hmm. In some instances, journalism is practiced by people who are aggressive and mean, and it works for them. Generally, I don't know, it generally has worked better, I think, if you can get along with people.
I think we should rename this show instead of the Media Project. We should call it the Apologists Show.
How about the Kindness Project?
There we go. That's an idea that we'll have to leave for another day.
No.
Media Project. It ought to be an hour. Oh, boy. Alan Chartok, Kaylin Brown, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week and hope to come back again next week for the Media Project.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Kaylin Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.